thinking it over, but yet we're still apart. Cause each man demands respect, and they get an equal share. And until you give it him back,
I'm Ann Cates, there'll be no peace. Another member of the intelligence community with more direct knowledge of President Trump's dealings with Ukraine may step forward with his own formal complaint. According to the New York Times, a second whistleblower would also testify before Congress about his information. President Trump, meanwhile, has taken to Twitter today to attack a Republican lawmaker who has criticized him for asking China to investigate the Bidens. Correspondent Jeremy Diamond.
Mitt Romney, in a tweet, called the president's actions wrong and appalling, and the president is firing back. He wrote on Twitter, "Mitt Romney never knew how to win. He is a pompous ass who has been fighting me from the beginning, except when he begged me for my endorsement for a Senate run. I gave it to him. And when he begged me to be Secretary of State, I didn't give it to him. He is so bad for ours, that is, Republicans."
Four homeless men have been murdered overnight and another seriously injured in New York City.
NYPD Assistant Chief Stephen Hughes said it began with the discovery of one homeless man dead on a sidewalk.
An expanded search of the area revealed three additional victims.
All of them were severely beaten with a blunt object.
There are three males on East Broadway had severe head trauma and were pronounced deceased at the scene. The one male at 2 Bowery was pronounced deceased at the scene.
They then searched the area and picked up another homeless man. The 24-year-old was arrested and a pipe was recovered. Chief of Manhattan South Detectives Mike Baldassano.
So the motive appears to be right now just random attacks.
Steve Kastenbaum, New York.
The death toll has climbed to 14 in anti-government demonstrations in Iraq. Correspondent Arwa Damon.
The protesters' demands are ones that many in this population have been making for years now. An end to corruption, improvement of basic services, and employment opportunities, especially for the youth.
I'm Ann Cates.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word, because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.org.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle. It took 15 minutes to purchase the gas station egg salad. Eat the gas station egg salad. And regret the gas station egg salad as you presented numbers to the board. To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 egg salad minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Uh-oh.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
WVON's third annual Family Care Expo is back and better than ever. Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 26th. This year, we're returning to the Kroc Center at 1250 West 119th Street with another action-packed day of informative workshops and a resource fair. Learn how you can buy vacant lots in your neighborhood, how to get in on the cannabis industry heading to Illinois, how to get a job in Chicago's construction boom, how to eat to live. We even have a workshop for young entrepreneurs. Visit our seniors and men's pavilion. There's something for every member of your family at WVON's third annual Family Care Expo, Saturday, October 26th at the Kroc Center. Keep listening for more details. Co-produced by Relevant Marketing and WVON. We treat you like family.
Have you ever walked by a building and thought, I wish I could see what's inside? Now you can. On October 19th and 20th, go behind the scenes in more than 250 buildings across the city during Open House Chicago for free. This citywide festival is hosted by the Chicago Architecture Center, and Wintrust is proud to be the presenting sponsor of Open House Chicago. Learn more at openhousechicago.org.
This is Reverend Dr. Otis Moss III at Trinity United Church of Christ, located at 400 West 95th Street on the south side of Chicago. We invite you to worship here at Trinity United Church of Christ. We have three worship services, 7:30 a.m., 11 a.m., and 6 p.m. Or join us on WVON during our broadcast every Sunday at 6 p.m. WVON.
Hi, I'm Lynn Richardson. I'm the host of the Millionaires Roundtable right here on WVON, 1690 AM, the talk of Chicago, the voice of the nation. It's my favorite radio station. And let me tell you why. Because we're creating millionaires one family at a time, one day at a time, $1 at a time. And that means you. So join us weekdays at noon Central Time so we can help you get to the next level. I'll talk to you soon.
The Millionaires Roundtable with Lynn Richardson, weekdays at noon on the talk of Chicago, 1690. WVON.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, SeidmanLaw.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the Americans Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlement. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services.
We're located at 7907 South Racine in Chicago, Illinois.
And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hey, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
The views expressed on our programs are not necessarily those of WVON, Midway Broadcasting Corporation, or our participating sponsors.
Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON.
You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Kelly on WVON AM 1690.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. It is America's Heroes Group Roundtable Community Outreach. Today, October the 5th. I'm Cliff Kelly, your host. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Corazzari. And our Heroes group is sponsored by Attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman, LLP, 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Toll-free number, 888-837-3275. The office is 312-781-1977. Also, America's Heroes Group is proudly sponsored by Pearl's Place Down Home Southern Cooking at 3901 South Michigan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois. Phone number, 877-275-5852. And America's Heroes Group, She Serves, She Matters, partner and sponsor, National Women's Veterans United, NWVU. They're at 8620 South Pulaski Road at the lower level, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. The office number, 872-731-2150. Website, www.nwvu.org. We are so pleased to have, in our America's Heroes Group Roundtable Community Outreach, which is what we do here, with us someone who is making so much sense about some issues that are going on right now in our community. He is Dr. Brian T. Brazier. As though people don't know where he is. He is the pastor of Apostolic Church of God. And thank you so much for being here.
It is an absolute pleasure to be with you again.
And again, we send our condolences on the passing.
Thank you so much.
Remember, absolutely. So, again, thank you for being here. You've got a lot to do with veterans.
Yes.
And in the church, in the community. We all do in the community. And you pay particular attention to them, for which we thank you. And what we're going to discuss today, because you have some very good ideas about that, the discussion is going to be a CBA ordinance, the advantages and disadvantages for our community. And tell everybody, because some people don't understand, Doc, what exactly the CBA is.
Well, the CBA is actually a legal document that goes on between a community and typically a developer or a municipality. And it outlines certain benefits that come to a community based on that development and the needs, because the African-American communities have been so disadvantaged and so taken advantage of by developers. People are very sensitive about two elements. One is gentrification and the other is displacement. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that gentrification does not cause displacement. It's displacement that actually causes gentrification. People can't move in unless other people move out. And what we found back in the 90s, when the Daley administration had a very specific mission to tear down as much property as they could, which is why we have so much public vacant land on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
That now other people who want to come into our communities can actually look at the public land and they can say, okay, what, you know, how do you do this? Yes, you know, we'd like to do this, and you can see people coming in, you know, trips. They have trips in. They've got tour buses coming in. And the North Side now has become so dense and so unaffordable that now they're looking at how do you move south, which then you can begin to understand how the South Loop was built, how the West Loop was built, and how it begins to move south. But we've come to understand that the city has relied on private development in order to do certain things. So it is actually private development that is the cause for non-development in communities. So that when they do develop, then they want their top elements and their top price from it, and many times people can't afford those kind of rents. And you have to kind of, and they wait until it's in their best interest, which is why we still have Michael Reese still vacant for decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Southworks is still vacant for decades. The South, the State Street corridor is still vacant. And we recognize that private development alone cannot provide or build or rebuild our communities the way we would want them to build.
Well, as you point out, Doc, those areas are still there, vacant.
Yes.
Yeah, they are. By the way, let me make sure you have the call-in line number, 312-374-8130, 312-374-8130. So what do you think, Dr. Brazier, is the best thing? They've got the CBA ordinance, as you were just discussing. What's the best way? What's going to happen here? What's the best way it can happen?
Well, you have to.
You've got so much influence there because you've got so much property, and the influence that you have over so many people. What would you want to see?
Well, what we have, Cliff, is we have to separate out what a CBA is, separate from the ordinance.
Okay.
Because the ordinance mm-hmm. is not maybe said it's a CBA ordinance, but mm-hmm. It is a housing ordinance. It's not a CBA ordinance. It's really a housing ordinance. So I'm all for community benefits. But at the same time, it's got to be spread equally. The ordinance doesn't do that. And that becomes problematic. So as we take a look at how does a community actually rebuild itself?
Mm-hmm.
First, the community has to be organized in a way that addresses the systemic issues within the community. It has to be able to address education. It has to be able to address safety and then economic development. Because if you have poor schools and high safety, then you're not going to get the economic development that you're looking for. So we first have to do that. And We cannot rely strictly on legislation or just response from the police if you're looking at safety. Because if you only look at response, then you're only looking at arrest.
Mm-hmm.
The second element of the safety piece really is how do you intervene into someone's life? Then how do you prevent? Because unless you address little Malik, who's 5, he'll become a shooter when he's 13. So you continue the cycle. How does a community wrap itself and organize itself to address its education, its safety, and then its economic development?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at at this current ordinance, it is a 1950 level ordinance. What it says is that all we're going to do is rebuild and concentrate poverty in a specific area, very similar to what was done on State Street corridor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to provide housing for all the severely poor. And this ordinance is saying we want to do something new. We got a new model. We want to build housing for the severely poor. And I was like, that's not new. That's old. It has no vision, and it does not work. We know it doesn't work. It doesn't work in Chicago. It has not worked anywhere. So to go back to an old model that tries to get at the severely poor, and I get it, but that's not how you rebuild a community or any black community. So there has to be a balance that goes along with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so along with being the pastor of the Apostolic Church of God, I'm also the chairman of an organization called the Network of Woodlawn, which is made up of all the major stakeholders in Woodlawn and residents that desire to participate. And we have 60 different board members that support the effort. We have a One Woodlawn initiative where we have held for the last 3.5 years, every 90 days we've held a community meeting about what the future of Woodlawn looks like. And we've never had less than 300 people in the room.
That's great.
At the same time, all the stakeholders are in the same room all at the same time. So what we've tried to do is to convene a community and provide a vision for the community, because as we all know, people follow vision. An ordinance protects. It doesn't build anything. So the question becomes, what do you want to build? What do you want to build for the strata, whether you are in an affordable range, or maybe you're in a market rate range, or whatever that range is? A diverse community is one that will survive and build. The second point is that we certainly want to make sure that whatever we do, if you're trying to build affordable, you also don't bring down the property values of people who are already there. Because then you create a win-lose situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this group wins and this group has to lose. That's not how you build. The ordinance actually sets that up where 60%, where 100% of all the vacant land goes to those who are 60% or below the average median income, which means that if you are in the it includes those who may be family of three making less than $10,000 a year, or family of three making less than $27,000 a year. We're saying all the vacant land goes to that group. Well, then, but there are far many more homeowners and property owners that will get impacted by that.
True.
So it may help somebody, but then it will kill somebody. It'll
mm-hmm.
That's not the way to build. How you build is when the community now becomes an institution of its own, because it can do things just like a developer can do. All right. A community can respond to an RFP by the city.
Can respond to what?
An RFP,
a request for proposal. Yeah. Okay.
So if the city wants to come out, a community can respond to that if it's organized
mm-hmm.
properly.
Mm-hmm.
If the feds bring out a proposal, a community can respond.
Mm-hmm.
The alderman can't respond. Only a community can respond. You want to begin to negotiate with private landowners, what tends not to happen, Cliff, in our communities, because in Woodlawn, we have about 150 acres of vacant land. More than half of it is owned privately. And much of that is owned by people who don't even live in Illinois. So in order to build, you have to have a compelling conversation with them as to what their investment is going to be like. So who has that conversation? To date, no one is having that conversation. But an organized community, the Network of Woodlawn, in their plan, will have that conversation with private landowners.
And many, you say, don't live in the community.
Half of them don't live in the community. Mm-hmm. They don't even live in the state of Illinois.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The other side of this, then, Cliff, is not just the vacant land, which is what they're trying to get at. But Woodlawn alone has 300 vacant buildings that are empty. They're abandoned. How does a community aggregate those buildings? And primarily it comes through the Cook County Land Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And begin to say, we're going to provide the financing for the rehabilitation of these buildings. We are going to organize the developers that are indigenous to Woodlawn or indigenous to our community. So if you have 300 empty buildings, Cliff, I will bet that we will be able to get 15 rehabbers. You got five buildings apiece. Every year you got five buildings, and in 5 years we'll have a completely different community.
That's a good point.
So it really comes down to not what you put in an ordinance,
mm-hmm.
but actually what you convene and organize to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Only an institutional community can do this. And Woodlawn now is institutionalized in a way that we are now prepared to go into the market and actually look for our own financing. So I'm not looking to the Illinois group. I'm not looking to look at 4% tax credits or 7% tax credits. We're going to go into the market and say, we want you to help us rebuild Woodlawn. And we've done all the necessary studies. We've got, here's what our land looks like. Here's the property values. Here's where it mm-hmm. is. Here's what we want to do. We got 3 abandoned schools. Right? What are we going to do with those schools? So we have plans for those schools.
The abandoned schools. Yeah.
We actually have plans for 4.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those schools is actually in Washington Park, Betsy Ross School.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because nobody mm-hmm. has said anything about Betsy Ross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when people ask me, they say, well, Dr. Brazier, he said, why are you so interested in Betsy Ross School? I said, I was born in Washington Park. The first church of the Apostolic Church of God was founded in Washington Park. Right. I was born there. I went to Betsy Ross School. I currently live in Washington Park. I said, now, if anybody else wants to do this, that live in Washington Park, have at it. I'll back off. But until then, we're looking at the surrounding areas, and we understand. So as Woodlawn goes, yeah. so does Washington Park.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what kind of response, Dr. Brazier, are you getting from the city?
Well,
the network of Woodlawn.
Mm-hmm. They are aware of our planning.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And our planning, their slice of that planning really only includes the vacant land.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The other 3 pieces that deal with the abandoned buildings, the conversation with private landowners, even the rehabilitation of properties of residents who live there who may not be able to afford to actually upgrade their properties.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to still move on those things while the mayor, who is certainly trying to get at everything she possibly can right now.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a big weight.
Yeah.
Not everything that every community person wants to do, she's going to be able to get at. She's only been in office, 3-4 months?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do is to make sure that our plans get communicated to the city, to the county, but also to one another. So we've got a complete network of people, and we touch on a quarterly basis over 600 people every month to begin to prescribe, here's where we're going, here's what we're doing. And the ordinance is really not in competition with mm-hmm. what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is a set aside.
Gotcha.
It's not a building plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
mm-hmm.
a set aside.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do is that whatever you decide, whatever the city decides, because I don't believe they're going to do 100% mm-hmm. affordable at that rate. But whatever they decide, it'll get incorporated into the network of Woodlawn plan.
Got you. Well, I think that's a great thing. That's going to help a whole lot of people, obviously. The network of Woodlawn, Dr. Brazier. If people are listening who would like to get involved and notified, how would they do that?
We have a One Woodlawn meeting every 90 days, and our next one is going to be the 24th of this month. It'll be at the church. It'll begin at 6:30.
24th of October?
Right.
6:30 is the next meeting, mm-hmm. and the address of the church?
6320 South Dorchester.
As though somebody doesn't know. I just want to thank you so much, and America's Heroes Group, we're concerned obviously about all the vets that are looking for homes, and well, you know, because you do for the veterans right there at the church,
right?
Yeah, so we just appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I will tell you, veterans are extremely important.
Yep.
We really honor our veterans.
I know you do.
Started with my father, mm-hmm. and we now have a nonprofit organization named after my father and mother.
That's great.
That concentrates specifically on veterans. And so I'm with you 100%.
Thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you, Cliff.
Appreciate you.
You bet.
Talk soon. All right.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the Americans Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlements. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services.
We're located at 7907 South Racine in Chicago, Illinois.
And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, veteran and host of America's Heroes Group.
Hi, I'm Chuck Bourne, veteran and advisory board member of America's Heroes Group. Veterans, family members, and community.
Please join America's Heroes Group every last Saturday of the month for a buffet dinner at Pearl's Place starting at 6 p.m. until 7:30 p.m.
We can't think of a better place to eat on Saturday than Pearl's Place.
I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is America's Heroes Group Roundtable Public Policy. Today, October 5th, 2019. We are, of course, pleased to have you with us. And with us now, we have in the studio, of course, I'm Cliff Kelly, the host. Executive producer is Glenda Smith, our digital media producer, Manny Cornazzari, and today's topic for this half an hour We are so pleased to have in our studio Rochelle Crump, founder and president of NWVU. I think everybody knows who that is by now. Rochelle, how are you?
I'm fine. Good.
As always. Also, Sean Claiborne is with us. How are you, sir?
Very good, very good.
Good, 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 good. And our good friend, just had a really a good meeting here in the studio between Pompey, which who knows who that is, right? People who have known him. Attorney Ernesto Borges. Yeah, how are you, counsel?
Great, great. How are you?
Good, 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 good.
Dr. Brazier and I, you know, yeah, we go back to 1957. He's the second person I ever met. The first person was his sister when he came to Chicago. He was the second. And he was
when I heard him say Pompey.
A lot of people. We lived in the same building. We grew up together.
That's what he said. Yeah, right. That's absolutely great. So what we want to talk about today is really a big problem we have here. A discussion, NPR Audio Veteran Affairs Secretary evicts members of Congress from offices in VA hospital. We have a clip on that.
The Secretary of Veterans Affairs has told several members of Congress that they're being evicted from offices that they've been using in VA hospitals. Now, House members use these offices to meet with veterans to talk through their benefits and their care. NPR's Greg Allen has been looking into what this means.
Congressman Brian Mast represents a district on Florida's Atlantic coast that extends from Palm Beach north to Port St. Lucie. Like many of his constituents, Mast is a veteran. He lost both his legs working as a bomb disposal expert in Afghanistan.
I get all of my health care from the VA, so I'm there regularly getting health care needs taken care of.
Mast has been an activist on veterans' issues in Congress since he was elected in 2016. Last year, he became the first congressman to open an office inside a VA facility, the VA Medical Center in West Palm Beach. Five other members of Congress, all Democrats in Florida, followed suit. Last month, they all received a letter from the VA telling them their time was up and they would have to move out by the end of the year. Mast urged the VA to reconsider its decision and released a video of a hearing in April in which he questioned VA Secretary Robert Wilkie over security issues and suicides at the West Palm Beach Hospital. Mast pressed him on when he would visit.
I will say as soon as possible, but let me also finish.
I was a bomb technician. We used to always use vague terms like that so people never know exactly when we'd get on the ground. I would like a more specific answer.
Well, the problem is that
Congressman Mast believes the dispute with the VA is personal. Secretary Wilkie denies it. He says the decision to evict members of Congress from offices in VA facilities has nothing to do with that hearing or congressional oversight of the agency. In a letter to Mast, Wilkie said the VA needs the offices for clinical space. Mast's office, he says, will be used for a smoking cessation program. Here's Wilkie recently on Fox News.
I want the space. I want it for our veterans. I'm not stopping the Congress from getting their oversight in. They have offices that are already paid for.
Mast and his congressional colleagues want to stay. They're co-sponsoring a bill requiring the VA to allow members of Congress to use its facilities to meet with constituents. At a news conference in Washington, Mast said it's an easy way to improve veterans' care.
We provide veterans with more access to care, more services, and more oversight without in any way negatively affecting anybody in spaces smaller than the size of the stage that we're sitting on.
The VA Medical Center in West Palm Beach is a sprawling complex spread out over 1.7 million square feet. Inside, in addition to the pharmacy, chapel, clinics, and other medical facilities, there's a coffee shop, food court, and a retail store. And down one hallway, about the size of a large broom closet, is the windowless congressional office. Vietnam veteran Dennis Gelsomino acknowledges it's a small space, but important for people like him.
Having that office in there is a conduit for veterans to go in and speak with a representative that's a little bit higher up and can voice their concerns and in some cases get a congressional inquiry on what's going on with their case.
After seeing what...
That can go on and on, but we get the point. We have one other quick that we want to do. NBC News audio. This is something veterans speak out about. Fight to claim VA benefits after military sexual assault.
Emily Lippert served in the Air Force until 5 years ago. She says she was sexually assaulted and harassed starting when she first enlisted at 18. Discharged for medical reasons, she went to the VA looking to file for disability compensation related to the trauma she'd endured.
They told me, we're not really sure how to do that. You'll get denied.
Someone said that to you?
Mm-hmm. You'll get denied. Because
but don't even bother.
Don't even bother.
At the time, she says she couldn't work, had a four-year-old stepson, and barely had enough to pay the rent.
I wanted to get stable. I didn't have to worry about, am I going to have a house tomorrow? Am I going to have food tomorrow because of this?
And to get all that, you needed someone to recognize what had happened to you.
For veterans who were wounded in combat and are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, the VA offers monthly payments depending on the severity of their injuries. But the process of claiming PTSD based on sexual assault is much more complex.
The thing is most advocates or veteran service officers don't know what to look for, and so the claims are being denied.
How many years did it take each of you to get the benefits you think you deserved?
Mine took about 12 years.
Mine took nearly 30 years.
Heath Phillips and Bridgette McCoy both advocate for other veterans now.
To me, it's a system set up to make you fail, to give up.
Do you know a lot of people who have given up?
Yes.
Why do you think you got denied so many times, Bridgette?
A male veteran service officer said to me, "You will not be paid for rape in the military." And I said, "I'm not here to be paid for rape in the military. I'm here to be appropriately compensated for my injuries that happened in the military, which happened to have been rape." And he just threw the papers, like literally threw the papers in the air.
He threw the papers in the air?
Threw them in the air.
The VA says it has taken a number of steps over the years to better serve military sexual trauma, or MST, survivors, including free MST-related health care, streamlining paperwork, and allowing more kinds of evidence to show that a traumatic event happened. The administration declined to do an on-camera interview, but in a statement said in part, every VA facility has military sexual trauma coordinators available to help survivors with these services, trained in helping veterans navigate the claims process to include claims related to MST. But just last year, the Department of Veterans Affairs Office of Inspector General found that nearly half of denied MST...
That can go on and on. It's a horrible thing here, obviously.
It makes us so disgusting.
Absolutely, and it's terrible. I just wanted to ask, because this is going to lead right into your record high active duty of suicides among troops, but I wanted to ask Rochelle first relative to this last clip,
yeah,
NBC. What's your... response to that?
You know, this is kind of old.
Yeah.
Because this has been going
exactly.
on almost, like she said, it took her 30 years to get her mm-hmm, benefits. Mm-hmm. So you can almost say that it's been going on that long.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing it comes from is inexperience from veteran service officers taking those claims and working with the individual because they didn't have the know-how. That was first of all. Mm-hmm. You have to excuse like the first decade, if you will, because this was new to them at
right.
that time.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what to do. And so as they went on, it's kind of like, okay, well, we're not going to take your claim because it's not winnable. Have you ever heard that term before? That comes from your service officers, from the American Legion and the DAV and the VFW, indicating they will not take your claim if it's not winnable. And I said, what is winnable mm-hmm. when you don't make the decision? Mm-hmm. First of all, the Department of Veterans Affairs makes the decision.
Right.
And so as a proactive way is to work with that person, take all of the relevant information, do the investigation. That's first of all, and then you go through the process. If, in fact, they are now taking better steps, why are we hearing this?
Mm-hmm.
So that means that there's no steps to take right about now.
Right, right.
There's no process.
Right.
There is nothing in stone because these cases are case by case. No case is the same. So every time that they have a claim, including they are supposed to have a women's program manager and a sexual assault mm-hmm. specialist there, no one knows who they are. So when they come in, they go to the VA. They go to the service officers. Sure. And again, you're dealing with people who don't even relevantly know about those issues anyway. And they don't want to know either. And that's relevant because of the fact when you go to the service organizations in the community, they're not addressing our issues at all.
We are. That's great. It's a terrible situation. I wanted to ask you anyway.
I just think that it's historically... been that they don't want to admit that this exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think mm-hmm. the higher ups mm-hmm. don't want to admit mm-hmm. that there's sexual transgressions mm-hmm. Against women for all these many years, that right. it has been prevalent, it has existed, but it's not been recognized, it's not been acknowledged, and I think they've been wanting to just push this under the rug all these many years.
Right.
So it comes from higher up.
And the most disgusting thing yeah. about it is that, you know, we now, since we're not admitting it, we don't talk about prevention and mm-hmm. how to keep these people, women in particular, and even men, from being sexually assaulted.
True.
I mean, there's the DOD even has in their own reports, 80% mm-hmm. of military women have been sexually assaulted, reported sexual harassment. 32% mm-hmm. have reported sexual assault. That's what's being reported. So if that's what's being reported, 80% sexual harassment, 32% assault, then what about all those women who haven't had the nerve or the ability to step forth and have mm-hmm. their voices heard?
The ones that don't have the ability.
And keeping in mind that they've mm-hmm. had congressional hearings over yeah. and over and over. Yeah. And if you remember, we had that clip not long ago where mm-hmm. the outgoing commandant for the Marine Corps indicated that sexual assault has gone up 20%.
I remember that.
20%. Right.
My call-in number is 312-374-8130. We're going to kind of change. This is a horrible thing also. But, guys, the suicide rate. U.S. military suicides have surged to a record high among active duty troops. Pompey, Consular, what do you think of that?
Well, I think you know, Sean and I talked about it a little bit. I think suicide mm-hmm. rates are going up in mm-hmm. general. You know, not just in the military, but certainly in the military, but you know, it's something. It's a problem, and it's a problem for
you mean
the
in
general
civilian
population.
Life. Also?
Civilian life
mm-hmm.
also has gone up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the difference is between civilian life and military, but you know, obviously we know that something happened down in Georgia. A couple mm-hmm. of one was 55 years old. I guess he's not a Vietnam vet, mm-hmm. but it's happening, and you know, it's what 22 a day, and I don't know if it's gone up much from 22.
Well, they
a day,
say the only
has
one
it gone up? Yeah.
They've gone up yeah. except mm-hmm. the Air Force.
Except the Air Force.
Air showing, yeah. It's showing a small decrease, but primarily it's getting worse.
Right, and then the scary part about it is we go back to the MAST, the story about MAST, the representative who was trying to fight to have an office in the VA facility, and he's asking for a football mm-hmm. field. He's asking for basically a broom closet. That's what he's asking for. And it disgusts me that we would have a conversation about not letting a publicly elected civil servant reach his constituents in a public federal building, and where he's wanted to be seen, to be heard, so people know exactly that he feels what he feels about the needs and concerns for veterans. And he's a veteran himself. He's missing his legs. He lost two of his legs serving this country.
So the thing is that's
disgusting. Well,
you know, when you get the kind of response, Elizabeth Van Winkle, who's the director of the Pentagon's Office of Force Resiliency, she said that most of the military rates are comparable to civilians, but added, quote, that's hardly comforting.
Right.
Of course, that's a poor excuse.
Yeah.
The
interesting thing, there was a study actually done that showed actually that it says this is from the Association of Psychological Sciences. Mm-hmm. Among service members and veterans who attempted suicide, approximately 50% had thoughts about suicide before joining the military. And 25% of them had attempted already before they joined the military. So being in a situation where you're under a lot of stress, you being turned become a soldier, a Marine, or so on, that can have a lot of stress in your psyche to actually push over those events. And when we're talking about adding all the stress about military sexual trauma, then we're talking about multiple tours of duty and things like that. People going on in Vietnam, you go one or two tours, and you know you're a vet. I mean, you're a combat veteran, hardcore. Guys are coming back with four or five, six tours of duty. You know, this endless tours of duty in Vietnam, Afghanistan and Iraq, and that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, what about the situation where, say, they acknowledge, the administration acknowledges that service members are still reluctant to come forward and seek help?
Well, they're reluctant because there's no trust factor there. You know, they hear so many stories about being denied, and most of them have probably been denied themselves.
This is part of the
process of the VA to deny you. And so, you know, that's traumatizing itself, where you come to the very place to get help and you don't get it. And it just seems to go on and on forever that, you know, we take one step forward and then we take five back. And so you get disgusted, and you just get depressed, and you just don't want to deal with them at all. And there are traumatic experiences that have happened to women, some prior to them going in. So, you know, going into, and others too, males also, where they had traumatic experiences, you know. And I'll tell you, we don't look at these young people who go into the military. A lot of them come from a Department of Children and Family Services that go into the military with traumatized already issues, and then it's compiled on when they go to war, and then they come back and can't get a job and can't, you know, focus straight because there's still all of these things that are going on that are barriers to their well-being.
You're really pointing something out. Just let me mention this, that this year, for the first time, the Pentagon included statistics for suicides by military spouses and dependents. That's one of the things you bring. Van Winkle, the woman I talked about earlier, said that the most recent numbers available were for 2017, but officials are working to get better at collecting the data. But according to the report, there were 186 families that had suicides, 123 were spouses, and 63 were dependents between ages of 12 to 23.
You were saying Rochelle and Sean, you know, a lot of these people go into the military already damaged before they go into the military. I'm just wondering if there should be some kind of psychological screening prior to, because some people can't hold up. I mean, I was a combat veteran in Vietnam, combat soldier in Vietnam, and you saw people who were not right when they got there.
And especially
when you're during a draft era, when you're taking everybody you can grab off the street. And a lot of those people shouldn't have been put in that kind of situation.
Probably in many instances hurt their own troops.
And I know guys, we had to take their weapons from them in the field. We literally had to take their weapons from them, and they walked through the jungle weaponless. I mean, there were instances when we had to do that. So, you know, maybe there needs to be some psychological.
I think they do that.
I think they took everybody, but not to the extent that needs to be done.
I want
to tell you, in my unit, I was the only staple person there.
And that says a lot.
Our number is 312-374-8130. And if you believe that.
if you were the stable one, God help us.
I thought we were friends.
Yeah, right.
But the problem is, I think with the problem with this situation is the average civilian in the public thinks that when you join the military, you come out and you have all these great benefits. You're treated like a king, and you have unlimited health care, things like that, which is not the case. That's a myth. Okay, so I can't even use the VA as an Army National Guardsman because I didn't spend 6 months in active duty. On my tour, everything I did when I was active was less than 6 months. So I can't use the VA unless I pay for it or I'm destitute. You know what I'm saying? Now, fortunately, I don't need the VA. I have private insurance. But the thing is, if you put on that uniform, particularly combat veterans of all people should have unlimited access to health care, period. It should not be a question. You shouldn't have to go and fight and prove that you got this in the military, out of the military. If you put on that uniform and you carry a weapon into any field of combat, period, one day, 5 minutes, or an hour, you should have unlimited 100% health care for the rest of your life, period. And that's what Americans really think happens when you put on a uniform and join the military, but that's not the case.
No, it's not. And then when you look at women go in with some reservation already about feeling safe. you know, going mm-hmm. to different countries, going to different places, and then to go to, you know, overseas and then get into a unit that you trust, that you feel you're going to be protected by your peers, and then your peers are the perpetrators, you know, that is just something that just, it doesn't sit well with you in life ever again.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the drill sergeant.
Absolutely.
It, but it's the captain.
Absolutely.
The colonel, mm-hmm. the major, right. the general, mm-hmm. You know, so you got higher
just,
ups.
Just like private industry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right. Who was, yeah. you remember, what was a 3-star general or something, a 4-star general, and the person who charged him was a colonel, a female colonel.
I remember that. Yeah.
That just happened not too long ago.
Right,
so
right,
it
right,
happens
right,
all the way up the ranks, not right. just the privates, but even mm-hmm. A female colonel.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have one in Congress
yeah.
also who's speaking out about it.
Yeah,
I can't think of her name right now, but
I've
she
heard
held
that.
One. You heard
yeah,
that,
yeah.
and she
mm-hmm.
was really an advocate. I mean, for women, I was so proud of her, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, she brought out so many details about what they need to do, why they haven't done it, and then she was pushing them towards making some resolutions about mm-hmm. you know how mm-hmm. to fix this thing. But mm-hmm. you know, it takes time because you know you're dealing with bureaucracy, you're dealing with people coming in all the time. How do you keep training these people? And like you said, you know, basically. Trying to find out who's well and who's not well.
Chief. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah,
and then, just remember, they still have to be convicted of that crime or you're still looking at them.
Yeah,
they
true.
Have to be convicted of those crimes, and a lot of times that they're not.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
So you are doing a lot, obviously, with your organization. Where is it going? Are there any changes?
I think that when we look at the increase of the discussions about it and knowing the hurt and the pain that we've caused our military women and those who have come home and who are trying to get their benefits, I think the more proactive and the more advocacy that we do for them, eventually something is going to have to break.
I think you're right.
And we
Let's
just can't back up from it. We can't break up.
Cell's calling. Hey, Cell, how you doing?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
I'm certainly appreciating what you're talking about right now, and my call is somewhat off the subject, rather quite a bit off the subject, but it's in reference to our celebration next Saturday. We are celebrating Dora Miller's 100th birthday. It's going to be at Jones Armory, 5200 South Cottage. The keynote speaker is going to be Jesse White. And Cliff, I sincerely hope that you will be able to give us a little bit of your time prior to you starting your show.
Okay.
We'll get started at 2 o'clock, and if you could just come by, because we want to recognize you and several others who have helped to make this day possible. We've been successful in getting the city to pass a resolution, recognizing October 12th as Dora Miller Day. We went through Alderman Brookings for that tribute. Brandon Johnson on the county board got his passed, and State Representative Yashawn Ford was able to get it done through the state. So all three of these geographical areas will be declaring October 12th as Dora Miller Day. And, of course, this is to help build a groundswell for what we're trying to get done. I look forward to
Medal of Honor. Tell us again. Tell us again where it is.
Jones Armory, 5200 Cottage Grove. Starts at 2 o'clock, 2 to 5.
Okay.
And keynote speaker is going to be our Secretary of State.
Great.
Jesse White.
Great. Thank you, Sal. Appreciate it. All right. Let's see if we can get in one more quick call. Bill is with us on 4. Bill, are you there?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. This is Bill Brown from Cook County Veterans Affairs. How are you today?
Good. Thanks
good.
For calling.
I just wanted to bring you up to date on a couple of things that we're trying to do for our veterans. First, I'm doing a Veterans Appreciation Day and luncheon at the Chicago Botanic Gardens on October 9th, whereas we're inviting all the vets and their families to come out there. We're going to recognize 4 outstanding veterans that we are going to have that day. It'll be Linda Cefalavia, the interim director acting director for the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, Secretary of State Jesse White, County Commissioner Sopudin from the 13th District, and Jim Bolser, a former alderman from the city of Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're having that on the 9th of October, and we'd just like to invite all of our veterans.
Okay. What's the other one, Bill?
The other one is going to be on October 19th. Veterans Affairs is going to be working with Recorder Deeds to have an event at Malcolm X on the 19th of October from 10 until 3 at Malcolm X College. And we'd like to invite our families and vets to kind of come on out for a family fun festival.
Bill, thank you so much. You hold on because our executive producer is going to get that information to make sure we can rebroadcast it. I want to thank you so much, Bill, and also, of course, Sel and all of our wonderful people here. Thanks to all of you. It's been great. Stay with us. We'll be back.